Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Film Hustlers.
Hey.
Hustlers.
Little tail. Hey, welcome back, everybody.
Dude, we're back together, the three of us.
I was going to say, he sounds close.
Right? He's not on a Zoom or a phone.
We're coming to you live from Universal Studios, and the three of us are together again after 2.5 months. I did just come back from Toronto. I wrapped the production part of the movie, so I'm happy to be back, and we'll talk about that in the near future. We'll get into all that, but it went really great.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I got to say, I'm proud of you, Robert, that you thought of this when we were in New Mexico, right? The idea for the movie?
June 20th, you and I were sitting in front of a house on the movie.
That's right.
Feliz Navidad.
Yeah.
And I had just seen Pentatonix on a TV show that my wife and Simon Lithgow had produced.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, you know what would be kind of cool is doing a movie that had the a cappella group that does Christmas in a movie. And that's kind of where it got conceived. So I wrote a paragraph about it. The funny thing about that is that while I was on the set of Meet Me Next Christmas, I started to think back, what was the original idea for Meet Me Next Christmas? It wasn't what I shot.
Yeah.
Right? Which sometimes happens. And I think this is really important for people to hear that, you know, sometimes your idea becomes something else. So I'm going to give you the short pitch of what I came up with the day you and I were together on Feliz Navidad. The pitch was the group Pentatonix is a huge sensation and their biggest successes come during Christmas. This year, Pentatonix are taking the year off. They're tired. They've been performing for 10 straight years during Christmas. They never see their families. And this Christmas, they just want a break. So they tell their manager, they're not touring. It's not happening. We're not doing any Christmas television shows. We're not doing the Rockefeller Center. It's not happening. So he cancels everything for them. And the Christmas spirit up in the North Pole starts to wane. So Santa figures out that because Pentatonix aren't performing this year, and because they've already canceled all their shows, that people are losing the spirit. So he hires them for a lot of money to do a concert in a stadium. And they can't turn it down because it's
they're dicks. I'm going to tell you right now. You're taking money from Santa, you assholes.
No.
Their whole lives he came through for them, and the one time he needs them. Go ahead.
They didn't know. They didn't know it was Santa. They thought it was this rich person with the stadium, and they were like, oh, we've always wanted to play a stadium. Maybe just this one time we'll play a stadium. So that's how they get the Christmas spirit back. But I hadn't thought it quite
out.
That's
what you pitched me in at Feliz Navidad?
That's what I wrote down. I went back and looked at my emails. And I
do kind of remember that. But I do remember when we were in New Mexico, and he played on the phone the Pentatonix for me because he was telling me there's no instruments. And I was like, what do you mean there's no instruments?
Yeah, but you were two gummies in, bro.
I was two gummies in. But dude, it tripped me the fuck out because I was like, wait, what do you mean? Like, he played it. I remember it on the bed and I was like, there's no way. He's like, that's just their voice. That's just they're doing it with their mouth. Like, you know, and I was like, that's impossible. But I was like, wow, that was amazing.
You were tripping out.
I was tripping out. Yeah. That's pretty good.
That was a fun night.
that was
a fun night. But yeah, that's what it was. And then I pitched it to writers. Two amazing writers, Camilla and Molly, who wrote the script. And they came back with a pitch that didn't include not one word, not one sentence.
So what did, okay.
Of what I had pitched.
So give us what you just shot.
They came up with Meet Me Next Christmas, which is a movie about a girl. Her flight's canceled. She's on her way to a Pentatonix Christmas show. She's leaving Chicago to go to New York.
By herself.
Well, she's going to go meet her boyfriend there.
Oh, got it.
So she gets stuck in an airport. Her flight gets canceled. There's a snowstorm. She goes to the lounge to just go kick it and meets a really handsome guy named Airport James in our movie. And they spend 3 hours together just hanging out. And she's like, do you know who Pentatonix is? I was going to their concert tonight. And he says, no, I have no idea. So she introduces him to Pentatonix. So finally his flight comes due and they're like, okay, your flight's taken off. And he's like, okay. So he gets up to leave and he turns back and says, hey, I know this is really weird. I know we just met and I know we're in an airport lounge, but it feels like we had some sort of connection and you introduced me to Pentatonix and, you know, I'm just wondering if maybe we shouldn't, you know, exchange numbers or, and she's like, well, I'm in a relationship. And he's like, well, he goes, I appreciate that.
Let me get that IG though.
Yeah. He's like, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. But, but I feel like it would, it just feels like we really connected. And she's like, look, I'm in a relationship. I don't want to not be in a relationship. And, you know, truth be told, I would feel really weird if I did that. So.
And she's in a happy relationship.
Yeah.
Or do we not know that yet?
She's in an okay relationship.
Mm. Okay.
Or go. As far as she's concerned right there, she's in a good one. So he says, okay, look, fine. I respect that you're in a relationship and that you don't want to exchange numbers. Let's not exchange numbers, names, IGs, no last names, nothing. He goes, but should we be single next year and we remember, let's meet at the Pentatonix concert on Christmas Eve. I would have to be single. You would have to be single. Let's leave it to fate. So she says, okay, I'll do that. And he goes, okay, great. Merry Christmas, Layla. And then he leaves. So then a year passes, and 2 days before Christmas, she goes home early to surprise her boyfriend, and he's
with the chick.
With a girl on her couch in her apartment. So she goes to her friend Roxy's house to go like cry and drink wine and be bummed about this guy Tanner cheating on her. And they're like, you know what?
Tanner sounds like a cheater,
yeah,
too.
She goes, you know what? What about this Airport James guy you met last year? She's like, oh, my God, you're right. I guess we were going to meet. She goes, but I don't know his name. I don't have his last name. I don't know his ID. I have no idea how to reach him. She's like, you know what? Maybe I'll just go see if there's tickets available. So she goes to the Rockefeller Center website, and there's pictures of all these people buying Pentatonix tickets. And there's one of James, and he's got his ticket. And she sees it, and she's like, oh, my God, that's him. So, of course, by this time, it's a small theater, and the concert's sold out. So the whole movie is about her trying to get a ticket to Pentatonix on Christmas Eve to meet James. And you have to watch the movie to get the rest
of it. Oh, nice. Come on, Robert.
Nice. Yeah, so that is good nothing pitch. Like
no, nothing like
the
yours.
Original pitch. But you know what? Producers don't always have the best ideas.
Well, no, but you started the conversation. You kind of created the world, I guess.
I was passionate about doing a movie that had Pentatonix in it.
Yeah.
And I did everything I could to get the elements to get it together, and it just turned out it wasn't my idea.
Yeah. And you had cool writers who said, let's keep this guy on board.
Let's keep this guy at bay and his ideas.
Let's keep him here and we'll make the movie. Okay, cool.
But, you know, I want to remind people who are listening, please go to our IG, comment, like us.
Yes.
Please go to wherever you can, you know, rate us and give us whatever you think we should have. Maybe even lay down a review.
On the if you go on your phone, you have the little symbol, the little purple symbol. You go there. You know, obviously subscribe to us and then give us a comment, give us a rating.
It helps us get listeners.
We have one of the most influential influencers on this show, and yet our IG is what? Davey Save, could you save us?
Davey Save, come on, man. We need more people.
Come on, Davey Save.
Okay.
Get up on it.
Okay.
But I do want to say, like, we appreciate all the comments. We appreciate all the likes. And, you know, we want to continue to inspire and, you know, talk about how we can get movies made and how you can get movies made. And, you know, this year we actually did one.
Yeah.
On the movie I was just on, every day I would think about manifesting. I really would. I would wake up. I would stretch. I think about having a good day. I think about getting out on time. I think about getting creative and the crew working well together. And I think about what I'm doing next, what inspires me, what ideas I want to start to manifest into happening. But you have to manifest. And I think our show is about that. You know, when we threw our hat over the fence and said, hey, let's go raise some money. Let's go do a short. I mean, yeah, it was a short, but that was a $60,000 short. And I know it doesn't seem like a lot of money, but that's a lot of money. People make movies with $60,000. Entire movies.
$25,000. What do you mean?
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
We had double that for 3 days.
Yeah.
And wow, we got it all, didn't we?
But you know what's interesting? It's good. What a dick. You bring that up, though, Roberts, because this podcast, remember when we first started it, it was kind of like, and if you think about it, it's a creative outlet for us, right? Like, I hadn't done Made in Mexico. You had done movies and stuff, but it's really kind of inspired us all to do stuff, right?
Right, right.
Not just our audience, but us.
My career took off really, really well when you started this podcast.
I appreciate that, and I think Davey Save and I need some financial compensation for that, right?
Oh,
don't
boy.
You think, Davey? Dave?
Jesus.
Like, we need a little bit.
Guess what the podcast money is paying for?
Our film.
The overage on our movie.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? It's worth it.
We'll
you
catch
know
up what? Eventually.
How lucky. And by the way, we have an announcement. Our movie, Beautiful Darkness, produced by Davey Save and I, directed by Rod Tootie Ranks. Don't use the Tootie in the titles. But we have been accepted to the Los Angeles International Short Film Festival.
Boom, yes. Baby. 27th annual, too.
Yeah, there it's going to be in June. It's a great festival.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's very, very well received.
Yeah.
Lots of great people are going to be there. I haven't even told any of the actors. I haven't told anybody.
Right.
Like, you guys are the first to know this. We knew we were going to start getting into festivals, right. And luckily, LA is the first one. So we're going to, hopefully, you guys can all come and buy tickets and come see us and come see the movie. It's going to be here in Los Angeles. If you're not from LA, then hopefully we'll be to you soon.
It's June 19th through the 27th. It's the 27th annual Los Angeles Short International Film Festival.
There you go.
But we don't have the date or the time yet, obviously, but when we do, we'll announce it, so come watch it.
Maybe we'll do a little thing at a local bar or bar and grill there, you know, meet some people there, meet up there.
Close by.
Maybe we'll buy some traguitos for everybody.
There you go.
You
never
know.
There you
go. There we go.
That'd be nice.
There we go.
Part of the reason we do the show is to talk, first of all, for us to inspire ourselves.
Right.
Because you have to always be thinking and you know, what you can do, right. And you know, and I've said it before, I was nervous about doing Beautiful Darkness. I wasn't fully confident, but you always should be a little bit scared. Like, if you're not a little bit scared, you're not challenging yourself, right?
Yeah.
I've raised enough money to know that it's not easy, and no matter how much you ask for, it could be a no.
Yeah.
But I don't know, there was something about doing that and proving to the people that listen to the show that it's possible, that you can do it. And on top of that, we went over our budget. So what happens when you do that? We figured it out. You know, we said, you know what? We'll just keep doing our show and keep paying for the movie that way. And we'll put it on this card over here and we'll pay off that card. Like, you know, you just figure it out.
Yeah. Going back to that, like, fear that you're saying, Roberts, that's exactly right. Because you have to have a little bit in you. You know, you have to be confident. You have to know that you're going to do it, but you have to have, there has to be a little bit in you being like, oh shit. You know what I mean? You have to, like, for me, I had to prove myself. I felt like this was my opportunity to really show that I could do this. And I think I did a decent job. You know?
Did a great job. Great job.
There's a couple things in retrospect I wish I would have, like we were joking earlier, to opening scenes with directors. It's the big, there it is. You know what I mean? This is important. You know, and you spend 5 hours on one shot and you fuck up your day. But it happens. You know,
It happened on my movie that I was just working on. It happens on a lot of films. You just, you know, if you think about stepping into the holiday, the day that we were shooting our finale, that kind of happened to us. Remember, we had all those extras there all day long.
Yeah.
And we had 15 minutes left. And we hadn't shot the finale. We hadn't gotten any extra shots. I mean, it's a dance that you have to figure out as you continue to make movies. But I think if you're a young filmmaker and you're not perfectly certain about what you're doing, just map out your days, do the best you can to figure out, you know, what the most important shots of those days are going to be, and just understand, you know. The AD on our movie, Meet Me Next Christmas, his name's Joel Hay. Before we started, we had like this meeting, and this was the week before we started. He put out a call sheet, and on that call sheet, there was strips, right, of the four pages we were going to do. And each strip had an amount of time that it was going to take that strip to be shot.
Yeah.
He ended up not putting those things on the call sheet, but I keep thinking that could have been interesting for us all to know that we need to be out of this scene in 3 hours.
Yeah.
We need to be out of this scene in 4 hours. We need to be out of this scene in 2 hours.
That would be helpful. I need something like that.
Yeah. Oh, no, you need to do something like that because you're producing movies now.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I've never seen it on any call sheet.
Saw it either. First time.
And I'm always thinking, like, what the fuck, man? We need to get it. I know it's coming up close. Like, what's the time?
Well, that's the thing is that every time you talk to an AD or you talk to a producer or you talk to a director and you're figuring out where you're going, like, how are we doing?
Yeah.
You never have an exact sort of an idea. Like, what time were we supposed to be out of this scene? Like, that'd be interesting to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know they do sort of know, but at the end of the day, like, you do end up catching up. If you're a certain kind of director, you know, you could fall behind an hour and then pick it up
somewhere else.
You could cut a scene, you could cut an angle or two, and next thing you know, you're back on track. And I've seen that a lot. And Rusty Cundiff, the director of this last film, he definitely did it.
Yeah.
You know, what I want to challenge people to do right now, as you're driving home or doing whatever you're doing, think about you know, maybe asking somebody for money to do a short.
Yeah.
It's a great idea you have.
Yeah.
And maybe put a list of 5 or 6 people together and make those phone calls and be scared, be nervous. And, you know, no one's opinion about you asking for money is going to hurt you. If anything,
it's going to help you.
Once you get a yes, you're going to feel really, really good about what's possible in the world.
Yeah.
And you can do it. You know, we did it. You can do it.
And you know what? It's funny because two things. Going back to the fear thing, because I really think that's important. I posted something, an interview with Sinatra before he passed. He was old. He was saying in this interview, and I'll repost it on I'll send it to our influencer over here who's supposed to help Davey us out. Davey Save, who has millions of followers, but yet we only have 200. That's okay. I'm just saying.
Is that all we have?
Jesus. I mean, I think it's 40, actually. I'm being generous. But Sinatra in this interview says, for 4 to 6 seconds before he goes on stage, even to the very end, butterflies, fear, all like to the point where he's almost going to pass out.
What's he going to say as soon as he walks out?
What is it going to? Is he going to remember the words? He's been doing it 40 years. You know what I mean? Is it going to fall into place? And he says for that 4 to 6 seconds before he goes out, fear. Once he gets on stage, it's gone. Like once that first note comes, it's over with. But it's that fear that keeps you alive, that keeps you performing right.
Well, you have to consider a couple of things. You have to consider where does possibility live? Because the possibility of you saying yes could change my life.
Yeah.
If I don't ask,
yeah,
then I don't get.
Yeah.
Then nothing changes, right? So possibility is always sort of in this weird space where unless you take a chance, unless you make that phone call, unless you ask,
yeah,
then you won't receive, right? So possibility is in your mind, is in the creation of what is possible for your life.
So with that said, on Access today, we're talking about Bupkis, the new Pete Davidson show.
Yeah.
And he's got fucking Joe Pesci and Edie Falco and some other great, Bobby Cannavale, all these guys. And we were like, Mario's getting prepped. And we're like, how did he get these? You know what he did?
Called him.
He asked him. they asked him, how did you get it? He goes, I just thought, like, wouldn't it be great?
He was here today?
No, there was an interview.
Oh, gotcha.
You know, but while Lopez getting prepped, we're going through, we're like, how did get Joe Pesci and Edie Falco to play his mom and dad in this kind of like a Curb type of show? And Bobby Cannavale. And so they said, well, he just asked them. We're like, that didn't happen. And then it cut to an interview with him on like a late show or whatever. And they said, how did you get it? He goes, I just thought these guys are great. And I just asked them and they said, yes. You know what I'm saying? So the point, like what you're saying is like, don't be afraid to ask. Yeah, what's the worst that's going to happen? No, that's it. You know what I mean?
And just to clarify, possibility is what's possible, which means that if you ask and they say yes, you made it possible. If he hadn't asked, he'd never know.
That's true.
Right? So the possibility lives in your creation of what is possible for yourself.
True. Yep.
So even though you may ask and they'll say no, you may ask and they'll say yes. It's nerve-wracking. It's a little, maybe not for him, maybe because of how he is. He just asked and they said yes. But, you know, sometimes when I called Emilio Rivera to do this, I was nervous. I was nervous because I was asking sort of in a vacuum. I don't think we had the money yet. I was thinking we were starting to raise it. We just wanted to get him on board so we can actually use that as a leveraging. But that's it. You know, you have to get out there. You have to, you know, give it your best shot. I mean, yeah, it's a lot of work, man. Whether it's a little feature or, you know, our little feature. Little feature is hard. A sketch is hard. Anything you do is hard. But if you really have a yearning to entertain people and you want people to see your work and you want to grow from it, then you have to shoot things.
And you can't wait for perfection either.
No,
yeah.
You
were talking about that today. Right. Say a little bit about that.
No, I was just saying sometimes I get caught up in, you know, I'm human, of course, but I think
you are?
I'm half Zuckerberg.
You're AI.
I'm AI, half Zuckerberg. No, but you get caught up, and I do. And I had to realize this recently when I'm coming up with projects and things, people to work with and ask, you know, hey, can we do this or not? But you can't be perfect. You never be perfect. But it's, I think the saying is, you get caught up with paralysis by analysis. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, oh man, that makes a lot of sense. So I have to remind myself that every day. But I think it fits well into the creative space, and you know, and then also too on the flip, there is a Tyler Perry story that you were sharing with me earlier too, that this guy's, with all due respect to his body of work, is not perfect in his production. So
no, let me tell you. I'm going to tell you. I'm not even sure I'm able to tell this story, but I'm sure no one's listening that I worked with or that works with Tyler. But and I remember thinking about it a lot. And then I went on set, and this terrific actor who plays Teddy came to me, and we were chatting. His name's Deval Ellis. And we're just kind of chatting. And I'm like, how do you feel about, you know, today? How do you feel about the amount of pages that we're doing or whatever? And he's like, oh, man. He goes, this is amazing. He goes, I can't, you know, I'm so blessed to be able to, you know, do something and have the page count be so low. And I thought to myself, oh, that's cool. That's interesting. He must be thinking about page counts too, you know. And I was like, you know, how many pages do you guys do when you go work for Tyler? And he says, I don't know. I think we did like 160 last time.
Wait, hold on a second.
Yeah,
it just, one day.
You know, it's not even gonna make sense to anybody, and certainly you're gonna have to sleep on it to understand what I'm saying. 160 pages in one day,
dude. That's how is that? I did 25 on the little web series I did, and that was a lot.
160.
That's not a time in the day.
And here's the crazy part. Here's the crazy part.
All B-roll or what?
No. Here's the crazy part is that I said what I basically reacted the way you just reacted, and he pulled out his phone and showed me a piece of the call sheet, and it was actually 115 or 110 pages for the day, but they were so far ahead that they shot 160.
I don't know.
Cameras. Like a soap opera, and even soap operas don't do that, but a bunch of cameras, a bunch of soap operas. He said that they have a tent next to the set. He goes, does a comedy, goes in there, changes, come out, does a love scene, goes in there, changes, does a dinner scene, goes in there, change, like that.
So you have to know, you have like
160 pages of
that
lines.
That was the other thing too. One interesting fact about Deval.
Wow.
No, he came into the chemistry read.
Yeah, he was off book.
He was already off book.
In the chemistry read?
In the chemistry read, he was off book. And we did like three scenes.
That's
and
amazing.
He didn't have to look at his script not one time.
That's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. But going back real quick to the Tyler Perry thing.
That's crazy.
The amount of pages that is being shot.
I watched the series afterwards just to kind of get a look. And there are imperfections that are not fixed. You know, and I don't know the details of why or how that gets, how he works exactly. But there are imperfections that normally, if you and I did them,
yeah,
it would not be accepted.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, you know.
Now, is that just in his series or is it in his films too?
No, I think he deals with everything differently. Yeah.
I've seen it in his films.
Yeah.
Oh, you have?
Oh, mm-hmm. Really? My understanding is that he's really just
a machine
focused on doing as much legacy work as possible, and that the audience that watches his TV shows, you know, are, you know, more interested in what he's putting out there and what the actors are doing.
Yeah,
I mean, these aren't bad shows. I watched them.
Yeah.
They look great and they seem to be playing well, and I would never, like, if I had seen it without knowing Deval,
yeah,
I don't know that I would have noticed.
Right.
It's very possible. But I was looking, you know.
I was looking
for the crew in the window.
Yeah,
you know, of the opening door, and I saw it. But it's only because I was looking. But having said that, it's just interesting because, you know, I'm over here as a filmmaker focused on, you know, on doing my best to perfect the art of making like these solid, almost, you know, flawless movies,
right?
Which you can never do, right? You always miss an eye line here and there. Shit happens.
Yeah.
But then you have Tyler Perry, who's one of our finest creators, probably one of the best ever as far as comedy, and he's doing things that I've never even seen anyone do ever, like in person. I've never seen anyone shoot 100 pages, 160 pages. You know, I've never seen anyone shoot. Shoot, I've never seen anyone shoot more than 10 pages.
No, that's
so
absolutely bonkers.
In one day, that's crazy.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around 100. I'm trying to wrap my head around 100, not even 160.
Yeah,
that's crazy. Do you not break for lunch? Do you not eat? Do you not...
Feeding tubes.
Do you go to the restroom?
Diapers.
Like,
I don't know. I remember
this got to be non-union work.
These people are making, you know, SAG and they're getting paid handsomely for doing it quick.
Wow.
And everyone's making probably a better living than normal because they're doing more than, you know, I don't know if they get paid per episode or how it works, but my understanding is that it's extremely well paid, probably more so than you showing up and working like comfortably like a normal actor.
No, he's obviously, you know, he's killing it, you know,
he's taking care of the people that work on his movies as actors. Absolutely, 100%.
No, he's got a great reputation for that.
No complaints, but they were definitely enjoying taking their time.
Yeah,
and doing once, and he was so prepared. Duvall was like super duper prepared. Like,
so he got the script and memorized that motherfucking one day.
He might have a photographic memory because he was just, and he's also an overachiever. He went to college and played football, and then he played for one of the pro teams for a little while, and then he decided he wanted to be an actor, and now he's working at the top of his field.
Nice.
Everybody does it differently, and there's no right answer apparently. And you know, someone like Tyler Perry, who's like building studios, I saw that he's building a hotel inside his studio, so you'll be able to stay in his hotel while you shoot on his studio.
Wow. Yeah.
So, and maybe it'll be even for people that are just like wanting to take a tour or something.
Yeah.
But he's like, you know, he's building an empire of filmmaking and television product, and he's definitely doing it well. And he writes, you know, most of it.
Most of it, all of it.
I don't know.
No, definitely.
And he's in stuff. But, you know, obviously he does movies that are big movies that are not shot 160 pages a day. That's for sure. But he's of a different breed.
Yeah.
And he's doing something that in his mind is a legacy work for sure.
Yeah. Well, he's a very intense dude. I've met him. I've actually gone to his house. I went to his old studio, the one Arua Brothers, and they were shooting at the time. And I went with Lopez, and it was cool because he met us at the front and like walked us through, you know, like, you know, we're like, oh, this is great. It was the one Arua Brothers own now. His new one is even bigger, they said. But they were shooting, and God, I forget what actress it was. And we walked up to the set, right? Because it's a lot, you know, it's a back lot and they're shooting. And so he goes over and we're watching and he goes over and he watches the monitor, and then he just starts directing. Like, he starts, do it again, like, you know, and the girls, and believe it or not, dude, he kept, again, try it again, and like, on her, and she nails it. Like, he got her to get to that place, and then he walked away. He said, okay, let me show you guys, we got this other place over here, and we're like, what the fuck was that? That was amazing, you know?
He's directing and working all the time. But, you know, I think it's a really great conversation, because what motivates a person to work that much in that way, like there's no stopping him. He's like an avalanche.
Well, he was homeless, you know, his whole story. We know his story. He was homeless, and you know, the Madea thing, the Chitlin circuit, and the actress didn't show up, so he had to fill in as Madea, and then it became a hit, and everyone was like, wow, selling tapes out of his trunk of his car.
So
like,
you can quit, or you can do anything you can to do the art or do the stuff. So that's a great way to sort of close the chapter on possibility is in your will.
Yeah. I think you got to figure out what's best for you. I'm kind of in between. I'm not doing 160. I like the idea of under 5 pages. If you have to go over, I think over 10's too many, especially cuz you want to stick to, for me, I'd like to like let the actors breathe, let them get into it, make sure everything's, you know, everything's set up, make sure my DP's happy, make sure everything's good, and then we roll, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think I'll ever shoot on film again, though.
Yeah, I mean, that was cool, and maybe you will, but it would have to be under a different circumstance. You'd have to have a little bit more time and money.
Yeah.
But I think it makes you think about all those things, and I think you have to think about what, you know, obviously, back to Tyler Perry for a second, obviously he's doing what he knows.
Yeah.
He's doing things that appeal to him, his audience, and he doesn't seem to be stepping away from that to do like, I don't know, like Mission Impossible. Like he's staying in his lane
Stepped away and he tried a couple things. It's funny you bring
that
up.
He acted.
Yeah, he's acted. But and I remember one time when I was at his house, I said, "You ever gonna do?" And I never thought of this. I said, "You ever gonna do like a gangster movie or anything like that?" He's like, "No," because I this is where I live. You know,
I love that. I love that.
So
and he loves it, obviously. Yeah. Speaking of love, I just want to send some love to extrememusic.com. They're an amazing service, and Russ Emanuel has done a remarkable job putting together thousands and thousands of composers, genres of music, and he works with Hans Zimmer, you know, with Bleeding Fingers. So extrememusic.com, if you're doing a film, if you're doing a television show, if you're doing, did you see the accent on that? The television show? If you're doing a television show, if you're doing any kind of content, extrememusic.com is being used by everybody in the world. You know, a couple of years ago, I think we talked about it on the show. There are songs that are being written and put on extrememusic.com that people, producers license for their shows that become huge hits. Yeah. On
Sons
the
of
shows,
Anarchy, right?
Sons of Anarchy had one that it's made over $2 million, just that one song, because it was so popular on the show. Extrememusic.com is no slouch. I mean, you go there and you'll be finding music that's on Sons of Anarchy that you can license for a good price and put into your project. So there's all kinds of great stuff there. If you're doing Christmas movies, they have a big Christmas section. If you're doing horror, amazing horror section, any kind of, even, you know, operatic stuff. I just recently, for the movie I'm working on, I went there and I found the Sugar Plum Fairy song that I'm using, and that's, you know, that's classical, but it's very fun, very good place to get your stuff. And it's actually, if you're a creative person, it's a great place to just sort of spend a couple of hours listening to different types of songs and getting them for your movies.
Well, Roberts, when you were up there, you were doing music for us off of screen for Beautiful Darkness.
Yeah, you're right. I was working on Beautiful Darkness and I was pulling all the music, which is really beautiful. And by the way, you guys can come see it at the film festival in June, and you'll be able to hear all the extreme music cuts that
are
in there.
The first film festival. There's many more to come.
Oh, my God. We're going to be in like 27 of them for sure. Absolutely.
Okay, before we go, one last thing. We got to talk about the elephant in the room. Roberts, as a seasoned producer, now working at the highest level, Davey Dave. Remember our indie film producer over here? Yeah. It was like, I got to get to the studio. I got to... Netflix, baby. Multi-million-dollar movie.
Okay. I had to put on my glasses. Look
smart.
Yeah.
Take it easy. Take it. We're on it's a podcast. So no one can see you. What's up with this strike that's happening? How is this going to affect us?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
last one was 100 days, right?
Yeah, my understanding is that this one's going to be harder.
Damn.
And it's going to take longer because there's a lot at stake. There's a lot of questions. I think the WGA members want some fair pay as far as the sales and residuals. And there's a big question about AI now.
AI.
That's apparently, you know, they need to put some level of control on that. Right?
But it's funny you say that.
It sounds like the studios are trying to justify writing jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
that you could tell AI, hey, write me a love story about two Latinos, and they write a good script, but then they hire a rock.
You still have to change it,
Yeah, a writer to polish, so they don't want to pay you.
Okay, so that's it. So then there's lots of things like that. Our show, myself, I know you guys are all in support of the writers getting fair pay.
Yeah.
I think, people need to be able to make a living, get their insurance, take care of their families. And if...
Let's be fair.
Yeah, and if that's what needs to happen, then I think it'll have to take as long as it's going to take. I just it doesn't feel good, and I think it could go a long time. And I think SAG's up next, so there might be a strike at the end of June anyway.
Is that going to slow everything? We're not making moves.
I feel optimistic. I hope that we can get back to work before the end of the summer. I would think that's the best you can ask for, you know. Yeah. But yeah, it's going to hurt people. It's hurting the writers. It's hurting everybody. But like I told my daughter the other day, I said, look, people need to watch programming. They need to watch movies. They're not going to go away. They're going to work it out. There needs to be some fairness to how these things are happening, then they'll have to figure it out.
Or it's going to open another entire breed of new content, new writers, new networks.
The answer is that if you work with the WGA, work with the DGA, work with Screen Actors Guild, you know, Producers Guild are behind the writers. So you have a lot of unions that are very active in this town. and they're all going to band together in the end anyway. Yeah. So it's going to be very complicated to not figure this out sooner. But at the same time, I don't, you know, it's not, again, because there's so many unions, you can't just ignore the writers, because eventually SAG's going to come into play, and you can't do a movie without SAG.
Yeah.
Because that's all your actors.
Yeah.
And then if they don't, and then if the DGA strikes with them, then you're it's just going to be a mess.
Yeah.
You know, you can make a movie without DGA or without WGA.
Yeah.
But you can't make a movie without SAG. You know, yeah. And a lot of indies do it without two of those.
Yeah.
But you can't do a whole movie without all three, unless, I don't know, unless, but then the studios, no, it's not going to work. They have to figure it out.
Sooner than later, come on. You're holding us up over here. Well, not yet, well, but you could potentially.
Hoping that the writers get what they want and that it's equitable and fair.
Right.
But let's hope it's over soon. In the meantime, tune in here. We'll talk about it next week and hopefully.
They're striking right here out in front of
me. I know, I saw that. That's crazy. Yeah. I honked for them.
Did you?
Yeah, but anyway, it was great to see you guys again. Congratulations on the film festival. Thank you very much.
To the place that was your ticket out. I don't know. Wow. Sort of.
But anyway, let's do it again next week, yeah?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Let's do it.
We'll see you guys next week on Film Hustlers.
I like that one.